Und der Impro-Podcast und vieles mehr.
Vielleicht, manchmal, aber oft mit Gästen.
Von und mit Janine Vasiri
und Carina Steger.
Herzlich willkommen zu unserer ersten Folge von Ja und.
Dem Impro-Podcast. Hallo Janine.
Hallo Carina. Wie geht's dir?
Mir geht's gut, ich bin ein bisschen nervös. Das ist jetzt unsere Premierenfolge, gell?
Richtig, okay. Ich bin auch nervös, aber das schaukeln wir. Was macht man eigentlich?
Ja, wir reden über Impro.
Genau, über verschiedene Impro-Themen.
Ja, mit Gästen.
Und wir haben heute schon einen Gast eingeladen.
Ja, und zwar unseren ersten Gast heute, Jacob Bennigan.
Hallo.
Hi.
Hi. Jacob Bennigan kennt man wahrscheinlich vom Theater im Bahnhof in Graz unter anderem. Und Jacob Bennigan kommt ursprünglich aus Kanada.
Weshalb wir jetzt unsere erste Folge gleich auf Englisch machen werden.
Genau.
Switchen wir gleich.
Ja.
Gut.
Good.
Good.
Wow.
Wow.
What a switch.
Hi, Jacob. Hi. Thanks for being here with us.
Thank you for having me.
We would like to know how you got started with improv. What got you into improv?
What got me into improv is that when I saw it, I wanted to do it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. When I was a teenager, I always knew when I was really young that I wanted to be on stage somehow. I didn't know how. And I was listening to a lot of comedy and watching comedy. And when I was about 16, my sister said, hey, you should go see theater sports.
Mm-hmm.
And I resisted a little bit at first because I thought, how good can a comedy show be? It's in my neighborhood in Edmonton, Canada. It's like, I got to go to the big cities to see comedy, got to get old enough to get into a comedy club. And then after a while, I checked it out and I was hooked right mm-hmm. away. And I was the kid bugging them for workshops afterwards, tugging on their sleeves saying, hey, when's the next workshop? yeah. Then I did a lot of workshops. Patty Styles was artistic director at the time.
Really awesome.
Yeah. And after probably a year of workshops, then I was invited on stage. The show set up that the first 15 minutes is called free impro, and it was a guided thing. Mm-hmm. Someone who's leading workshops kind of had the new people wanting to try it out, and they would guide them through different games and scenes. So that was the first step, was mm-hmm. getting into free impro. Yeah, and this theater sports, so it's teams of improvisers. And there would be first half teams, and then second half after the intermission would be the more experienced people. So the show was a huge party. There was always 20, 30 people involved. Like, it's usually 20.
Whoa.
Yeah. It was always a great time on Fridays. Yeah, late night show, 11 o'clock at night
mm-hmm.
on Friday.
So you started really early. You said you were a teenager when you...
Yeah, so I think I was 17 when I was first okay. on stage mm-hmm. with impro.
And you have done it ever since?
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay.
Every opportunity.
What? How did you come to Graz? What did you... How did you get to Austria? I mean, you have the center of improv in America, in Canada, everywhere. Why
yeah.
Graz?
Well, we were touring a lot and going to different festivals.
Mm-hmm.
And we were invited to the Seattle Impro Festival. And that's where I met some Germans
mm-hmm.
From the Gorillas in Berlin. And they invited Rapid Fire over to... Rapid Fire Theater was the theater that ran theater sports in Canada. And we got invited to the first Impro Festival in Berlin, 2001. And there I met Beatrix Brunschko.
Mm-hmm.
And she's from Graz. And eventually we got together and fell in love. And now I moved here.
Okay.
Yeah. And luckily, Theater im Bahnhof is a great place to land for me. And they adopted me and they do fantastic work. And their improv is top notch. And everyone is interested and curious. And there's always something new, even after all this time.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So you basically continued playing improv from Canada onwards to Austria, right? And,
yeah.
And I'm curious of was it in the beginning? How was it for you? Did you find it was different from the style of like a more European improvisation and more American or Northern American improvisational style?
Yes, yeah, it was different and continues to be different. I think. It's hard to pinpoint exactly what it is, but it's like, especially Theater im Bahnhof, this was my first major experience, was that they're always trying to do something new and looking at why are we doing this show and how do we break our pattern of what we have been doing? So the show is always stimulating, and the group is always stimulating. And experimentation, I find, in Europe is encouraged more than in North America, at least in the 90s, or then into 90s, 2000s, when I experienced the change. It would be harder to convince people to experiment in North America, maybe,
yeah,
from my experience.
Is it because I don't know about you, Shannon, because I also always have the feeling, if you talk to people who do improv in America or in Northern America, in Canada or in the US, that it's more of a comedic approach.
Mm-hmm.
That's my feeling. Whereas in Europe, or with when you talk to improvisers from a European or with a European background, that it's kind of not I don't know if I think serious is the right word, or maybe not, I don't know. But it's a different approach, so it doesn't always necessarily have to be a comedic scene or show. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah. And that is I think that's very true. And it's not that we're trying to be serious on purpose, but it's okay if it is serious. Mm-hmm. That's the difference.
Exactly.
If you try to be serious on purpose, it's going to be a dull show, I think. We have to mess with each other a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
And the joy of messing with each other is part of the joy of the show.
Mm.
So if everyone agrees this is a serious sequence, okay, yeah. But when do we break it?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And that has shifted in the last couple of decades in North America too. That a lot of groups in America are America by America, Canada. That it's okay to do something that has more weight to it. So it is a shift. I never want to make a rule about this is the way it is there. This is the way in Berlin they play it like this. In London they play it like this. But the tendency has been aiming for comedy in North America. And here it's aiming for theater.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And you still do improv in Canada and the US, right?
Yeah, whenever I go back for the Fringe Festival, the big theater festival, mm-hmm. every August. And I've got all my good friends there and lots of shows and lots of things to do.
So you get back together as a group every year for this festival.
Yeah, especially with two of my best friends, Ron Peterson and Mark Meir. We do a trio show called Gordon's Big Bald Head. And the group has existed since 1992.
Mm-hmm.
And
all right.
We did sketch comedy at first, and then we did improv, and it was with a whole bunch of people at first. Then we reduced it. And over 20 years, a lot of things happened,
mm-hmm.
more 30 years. And then about, I don't know, 15 or 20 years ago, we said, oh, let's not write a show. Let's do another improv show. What do we do? I don't know. Let's just open up the program where there's hundreds of other plays. We'll read someone's description of their show, and then we improvise that as a mm-hmm. play. And since then, it's been a huge hit because it was really about the festival. People love seeing the show at the festival.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So it's one of the highlights of my year is to go back and play with these guys. Yeah.
And Theater im Bahnhof, you have been with them for how long?
Since I moved here. I moved here officially in 2004.
Okay.
And I was ensemble member 2006.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
And I hope you don't mind me asking, but I guess you played in English at first at the Theater im Bahnhof when you did improv, right? Did you switch between German and English, or how did you get used to the...
Yeah, it's shifted over the years,
yeah.
back and forth. But one of our challenges when I joined the group was, let's make me do as much as I can in German.
Okay.
And then when I give up, it's do a scene in English. That's fine. Mm. But it made us connect in a different level.
Mm-hmm.
We had to understand what someone means. So mm-hmm. we couldn't make as many jokes, which makes the moments more pure, you know? You have to mean what you say and say what you mean. And that was a great challenge for all of us in the theater. That mm-hmm. I have to articulate in such a way that it's clear or express it, and they do too. And if there was something that I missed in the show, it's usually because someone is making a joke at a higher level. And I go, what was that about? Oh, that was a joke about... And I was like, oh, okay, it was a joke. That's why I didn't get it. Because it wasn't something that I was feeling.
Mm-hmm.
It was an intellectual thing.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Okay. But you're not only with Theater im Bahnhof. We also saw you with the English Lovers
yes.
in Vienna.
Yeah.
So you're part of that group too. Do you do regular shows with them as well?
Yeah, for 25 years now, they've been doing two shows a month and two runs a year. So a run of Christmas shows, 3 weeks, and then springtime, 2 weeks, a show every night, which we develop and come up with new things to do. So also there, we're always trying to push ourselves and say, what haven't we done yet? Or what are the tools that we've forgotten? Or what are our new tools? Yeah, and that's a group of 9 improvisers from English-speaking countries, all living in Vienna, except me, I live in Graz, and a couple of musicians, and yeah.
Okay.
It's really fun.
You're a very busy guy.
I'm a busy guy.
Yeah, because I was also wondering if you're still with, because we said, talked about the Gorillaz as well, if you do, I was wondering if you, whether you do shows with them as well, or is that just... If there is a festival or whatever.
Yeah, if there's a festival, if I can get up there. And I've gone up as a guest for the Gorillaz as well. And in that theater, in Ratibor Theater, they do once a month guest English show. Mm-hmm. And so I get up there a couple of times a year to do my solo show or shows with Jim Libby. He's in English Lovers, but as a duo, we're called Rocket Sugar Factory. So we do a lot of shows under that name too.
It's wonderful.
Yeah. We just played in Brussels in a theater built for impro. Improvised.
Really?
Yeah. Yeah, wonderful place.
I didn't know. Well,
I didn't know about that.
You got to go to Brussels. Yeah, mainly it's French shows and maybe 30 to 40% some English shows. Mm-hmm. And some friends of mine set up a lot of the English shows. And so they gave us 3 shows over the weekend.
Great.
Yeah.
Wow.
That's really great.
Yeah.
I'm a little in awe now because of what all the things you do. Did in all the time you have been doing improv, did you ever get the feeling like, I'm getting tired of this or I need a break or something?
No.
No?
No. Because I learned pretty early on that if you're unhappy with what you're doing, no one else can help you. Mm-hmm. Right? It's no one else's fault if you don't have a good show. You know, you can always navigate your way through other people's. If other people are having problems with the show, you got to make sure you're happy. Mm-hmm. And I learned that pretty early on, I think, especially from Patty. So yeah, I never get bored. I love it. And even if a show is kind of pedestrian or there's nothing special, I still have such a great time. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Even if I watch a bad improv show, I still love it. You know? I love that people are doing it and fucking up on stage and jumping into the void.
I think what you're saying is really true. I think it's really important that you have fun on stage with the people that you're with and with yourself as well. And if you fuck up, then have fun with it.
Yeah. Yeah. There's no shame in it. And nobody gets hurt. It's just maybe an embarrassing moment. Mm. And usually like after a show, if someone has a regret, it's usually because they say, well, I thought it would be funny. And that's the first excuse that comes out. Why did you do that, Bizarre? Well, I thought it'd be funny.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Do you think that comes from trying too hard?
Absolutely.
Yeah. Yeah, I had that a lot of times when I started. I really tried to be funny. And I read Keith Johnstone and he says, don't try to be funny. That's the worst thing you can do. But I still did it. And I had to learn this. It's not a good way to go on stage.
Yeah. It's a fine motivation.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Like I want the audience to have a great time. But the way to do that is to be a person in a situation. Mm-hmm. Be in a scene. Don't be yourself. And because if you're someone else, then you have different vulnerabilities and you're commenting on humanity just by being someone else instead of defending your position to show, look how funny I can be. Mm-hmm. And that takes you out of the situation and puts you in front of people. And there's some people that can do it. Some people are brilliant at being funny all the time. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. It's way easier to just don't be funny. Just be a person. People are ridiculous. People are funny. So just play a person.
Yes, that's true.
Yeah. People make emotional choices that override their logic, or they're too logical when they should be emotional. That's hilarious. So I mean, I always encourage students, stop being funny, just be a person. People are hilarious when they don't want to be.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I think it's also, if you take that character you're playing or those people seriously, it gets funny automatically, I think. Because if, as we said before, if you try to be funny, you don't really take the person or the character you're playing serious to some extent. Mm. Yeah. But so you said that you also tell that to your students, and we talked about that before recording. You also not only play a lot, you also teach.
Yes.
And how do you find that teaching experience with theater students?
It's been a challenge for me, because usually when I teach a workshop, I go to Bremen for a weekend, and mm-hmm. they're already improvising, and I'm just getting them to, you know, make their show better or their style better. I come in and make my point and leave, you know. But now I've got 10 students for the whole year, and it's to make them better actors. It's not to form an improv group or mm-hmm. to make them better at being improv. So it has been challenging, and together I'm honest with them sometimes. I was like, mm-hmm. I don't know what to do right now, so let's talk about it. And they're great with that. Mm-hmm. And through their help and through my development, now I'm kind of in a good groove towards the end of the semester here. We're finding a really cool way to play mm-hmm. yeah, that I've never seen before. I haven't seen anyone do anything like this, and it only developed because these guys are so curious and excited mm-hmm. by the whole idea of being on stage. And also they have no expectations of what an improv show should be, mm-hmm. except for what they've seen. They joined the school, then they saw a couple of our shows, but that's it. They don't have this improv is this. Mm-hmm. It fits in this certain box. They see it as what it is. These are tools to use.
And also you're a really great teacher, I think.
Well, thank you.
Yeah.
We can say
Me
that.
Me too, yeah. We can say that,
yes.
Yeah. We had workshops together, yeah. Yes. Yeah.
That when you did a workshop with us, the most important thing for me and for most of us was...
Oh, I think I know what's coming. Yeah, yeah.
Look at each other.
Oh,
we
yeah.
didn't look at each other. We were so in our heads.
Yeah.
And that helped really for every scene. That was just a small thing, but it really helped. And also you can explain things really well. So now I finished praising you.
Oh, thank you.
You're a really, really great teacher.
Oh, thank you.
Yeah. And also, I think you're a really, really great improviser as well.
Yes.
Because you also, like, not only do you play with other people, you also do shows alone.
Yes.
Like solo improv. How did you get to that?
There was a show in Theater im Bahnhof called Warm Anziehen, which was a collection of like 20 or 30 little things. So the audience would come in on any evening. They could see, they could go from one room and see something for half an hour, go to another room, see something for 10 minutes. And different nights had different things. It was like a little mini festival in the building, in different parts of the building, in the parking lot. I built little sculptures for a 5-second interactive theater thing, little puppet thing that someone would go in a little cabinet and play with this. And that tells a little story. And so I thought it was an opportunity to, well, do a solo show. A lot of people were doing solo shows. And first I talked to people about different ideas, different themes. And then I said, well, I'm an improviser. I'll just improvise. So I worked with Helmut Köpping, who was also a brilliant man, to develop Game of Death. And we premiered in 2012 in January. And it was a success for me. And the audience liked it. So I was like, okay, let's do it in February. Let's do it in March. And we just kept it going every month since then. So that's how it happened.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And before that, like in theater sports or in festivals, sometimes there was the challenge of now you have to do something by yourself, right? And also in workshops. And so it's really good training to go over that wall, do a scene where you know no one is going to help you. And I recommend everybody do it,
mm-hmm.
even just for a 5-minute thing. Because it's scary and you figure out what you want to do,
mm-hmm.
you know? As long as you don't give up on yourself in the middle of it, you're going to be fine.
Right.
Yeah. There was a theater sports tournament in Atlanta, Georgia, where everyone was from different cities. And I was on a team that was from a few people of different cities, but then they played with their original cities. So I had to do one show by myself. So I had to do like 4 or 5 scenes, maybe 3 or 4 scenes solo. So in that night, I had to figure out, okay, how do I do mm-hmm. a variety of styles of solo shows? And so that was, I don't know, 96, 97, 98, sometime around then. And it stuck with me ever since then. And so when the opportunity came up, I said, no, I think I can do it. It's not I've done a little bit before.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Or in theater sports, it'd be like, okay, your punishment is you have to do a scene by yourself.
Mm-hmm.
Or mm-hmm. the rest of the team is punished, so they're off. They can't play, so you have to do something. So there's been opportunities for that. But also to do a whole hour by yourself is a big challenge.
Yes.
Yeah.
I believe you. Yeah. How do you prepare for this?
I don't.
it's improv.
Uh-huh. Well, I like the show to be structured with a little short story that has a challenge to it, a little game to it, to get myself, you know, out of sorts. Mm-hmm. Then I have a longer story, which is 45 minutes to an hour, and then maybe another short story at the end or a song with a musician. So to prepare for the show, I will just think of what's a form I'd like to try, especially for the short thing. I'll try a new challenge or an old favorite.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So once in a while, I come up with something original, or if I, because it's in Theater am Bahnhof, often there's a set from a different show, and sometimes I look at the set and go, oh, this is inspiring for, boom. So the last one was the set for Lawrence Kabas's show, Warme Geschichten. And he had all mm-hmm. these different things on stage, and so I did different monologues from different characters in different parts of the stage, inspired by the setting. One had a shiny, shimmery curtain, and asked the audience who's standing here, and one, there was a punching bag, and asked the audience who's standing here. And then I switched between these, and they all had the same experience. They all experienced one thing in the day, and that was a car accident that they all witnessed.
Mm-hmm.
And these were the monologues then from each of these five or six different people in their own, going through their own mm-hmm. shit. So that's an example of mm-hmm. how I prepare. So it's especially great if there's something on the set that inspires me.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So what you basically do is sometimes you also borrow just the stage, basically, as an inspiration. Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh.
Hmm. I mean, what I like to do when I get told you have to play by yourself mm-hmm. is do monologues, because that's what I feel comfortable with. When I have to try to switch between characters, I start to get really hasty. Mm-hmm. You know, the switches are really fast, and then I get confused. I never see this with you because you're a professional and you've been doing it for years and years. Did you get someone, an outside eye maybe, or someone who helped you with like struggles that you had preparing for a solo show?
It wasn't really struggles so much. It was just figuring out something, a structure I can hang my hat on.
Okay.
Like something that...
right.
The Game of Death does have a structure to it in that it gives me information in the beginning. It gives me a couple surprises through mm-hmm. the middle. Because I realized I don't want to be in control of everything. That's a real challenge. As a soloist, you are in control of everything, and that's a little boring.
Mm-hmm.
I want things to throw me off my game a little.
Mm-hmm.
So I have a timer I give to someone in the audience. It goes off randomly, and that means a character will die. I give someone else control of when we flip a card over that has new information on it mm-hmm. to inspire the next act of the show. So little things like that. Or if it's great if there's a random sound, like if there's an ambulance that goes by outside.
Mm-hmm.
It's always, the timing is always perfect. Or someone knocks over a bottle with their foot. The timing is always perfect. And it's always like, thank you for that inspiration, that random little thing. Once there was a moth that flew in front of my face that totally gave me the ending of a show. I didn't know I was coming to a climax, and I didn't know how to end this story. Then a moth flies right in front of my face, and the whole audience saw it, and then the solution was there because of this moth. So I love stuff like that. I can't remember what the question was.
Did
I have someone help me with struggles? Right. And I got off on struggles. It's not about struggles, but understanding the form. And Helmut Kipping was my guy for that.
Mm-hmm.
And after a few shows, we talked about, this bit is too long and let's change this. But he's very hands off, you know.
Mm-hmm.
He just wants me to enjoy myself.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Well, when you play solo, you don't get inspiration from your fellow players. So I think it's important to have inspiration from things or animals like moths or bottles.
Yeah, in the beginning of the long story, I talk to the audience a lot. I get a lot of information mm-hmm. about a location, about what they think of these images, and like a carpet of ideas. So then as the show goes on, if I need something, I don't have to come up with something. I can just reach back and pull something off the shelf mm-hmm. of ideas that are already in the room. And that saves my bacon every time.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, oh, what should happen next? Oh, she mentioned a beach, so go to the beach.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I think the audience loves that, because with improv, they love being involved and give a lot of information to the actors. And when you do it solo, it's even more impressive for the audience when everything they told you is leads you to something.
Yeah. Yeah, they're invested.
Yes.
Yeah.
That's
yeah.
a big difference with improv and other yeah. theaters, that the audience is directly invested. Mm. That's my inspiration that hit the stage, and look what happened.
Yeah, and I think then so satisfied when the inspiration is used, yes. and then it's just like, oh my God, I said that, and it's in the story. Mm. Yeah.
And I remember when I saw your show, I forgot about the timer, but when it went off, I was really excited. Yes, as an audience, you're really invested in what you're doing on the stage.
Yeah, and I think as an audience member who also plays improv, you're just, because I remember seeing for the first time the Game of Death, and I was just in awe. I was just mm-hmm. sitting mouth open and just like, first of all, how does he remember all the inputs? Secondly, how does he, that's one thing I'm always so curious about, because what I think, Jacob, you do so well is if you do your solo shows, you have so distinct characters. You know what I mean? So
that, I have to.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And I was wondering how, because I think every act or improv player has a certain maybe key to get in and out of a character. But with the solo improv, you have to do it so quickly. Mm-hmm.
Yes.
And if I may ask, do you have a recipe for that, or do you just go with the flow? Do you have different approaches for the characters? How do you do that so yeah. quickly and properly?
I think I listen to the music of the scene, and what kind of voice would I expect to, you know, if I'm doing a scene with a bunch of people, I need to hear the different voices as if there's different actors. And so also my physicality, I'll do a small change, and this tells me, okay, this guy sounds like this because he's just standing like this, but she stands like this, and so she talks like this, and that tells me so much about that person. So if you're thinking improv tips for people, change your body first, mm-hmm. and then just change it. Just a slight change will change your voice, and it'll give you a different history and different values and different culture behind this person. So I do that. Also to keep the musicality, the dynamic of the scene going. I don't like doing monologues.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. that example I gave before was like five or six. I'd switch between them. I don't like doing one monologue. Mm-hmm. I don't know if I'm bored or I haven't discovered the magic key to it. But after 30 years, like, yeah, monologues are okay, but I'm not really, I'm not thrilled to do it. Yeah, and then when I switch to the other character, I think my impulse is, what would I want another improviser to do for me? I would want them to be challenging here or to be supportive here. Mm-hmm. And that's my expectation, and I can either support that expectation or I could subvert that expectation for myself. So a guy comes to another guy asking for help. Character wants help. Actor wants struggle. And when I switch that to the character, I don't know what I'll do. I might be inspired to do something else. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I said that about the monologue because I'm really comfortable with it. And yeah. that helps uh-huh. sometimes when you're nervous and you have to do something alone. Then I immediately
start talking.
To monologue and about my life and my day and how everything is difficult. But I'm dealing with that.
Yeah.
And there's nothing wrong with that.
Yeah, yeah.
Absolutely. As long as you were interested in your own monologue, mm-hmm. you know?
Yeah.
I think.
Yeah, for me, I'd rather like do an action
mm-hmm.
when I'm not sure about what I'm supposed or what I'm about to do. I'd rather just like do an action and do that for a very long time. Just keep doing it until something comes up.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I know. But I really like this when I play with you because you do it so well. I always know what you're doing. And even if I don't know you,
even if I don't know what I'm doing.
Yeah.
Yeah. I heard a podcast a while ago. I can't remember who it was, an improviser. And he was talking about how when he's on stage, he listens to his brain as if it's not his brain, that it's someone else. Mm-hmm. And so if an impulse comes up, he won't censor it. Mm-hmm. If it doesn't make sense, it's like, well, okay, my brain went there, so I'll do that. And I went, I think I do that too sometimes. That mm-hmm. Follow the impulse before you think about the consequences. And as a soloist, you need to do that. You have to surprise yourself. And so, yeah, whatever my brain gave me, okay, I don't understand it yet. but let's try it out.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I think if you censor yourself, then you will die on stage eventually.
Yeah, maybe. Eventually, yeah. It's also, it's just a, why? Why censor yourself? Yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Unless you're an asshole, then please censor yourself.
If someone told you, I really want to start solo improv,
mm-hmm.
what would you recommend to them?
There's a psychiatrist in... what's wrong with you? What would I recommend to them? In what way?
Like how they get started, what to look for, how to deal with all the different personality in their heads.
Yeah. No, I get this question a lot because there's different people that want to try it out and I've been doing it for 10 years more. And the last time I was chatting with someone, they had no idea what their show would look like or anything. So we were just talking about, well, what kind of stories interest you? What shape of story interests you? What kind of characters? Do you want to get into genre? Do you want to do personal stuff? All this stuff you have to ask yourself. Or get on stage and see what comes out, which is kind of what I did. That I didn't know that I wanted certain kinds of stories until I realized, oh, I've done 6 of these kinds of stories in a row. Then now I'll switch to something else and see what else is there. So it's really, if you have an impulse of, I've never seen this kind of show, that's important. If you want to copy someone else, okay. It's better to get inspired by someone else and then and react to that, I think, rather than try to copy. What else would I recommend? I recommend building some part of the show that you are not in control of somehow. And that means at least getting suggestions from the audience.
Mm-hmm. Or like the alarm clock, the egg
clock. Yeah, my egg timer is a single surprise. I get a lot of suggestions from the audience at the top. They're not suggesting this scene should be about this. We're just talking and we get all these themes. They react to images on cards. Or we choose a place in the world and I say, what do we know about this place? Or whatever topic comes up. It takes 5-10 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
What else would I recommend? Yeah. Do stuff that's a little out of your control. I saw one guy, great guy named Lee. Can't remember his last name. He's in Edmonton and he did a solo show all about the macabre. So all horror stories and dark stuff. And I was just floored by it. And he did a whole story in gibberish with a whole bunch of characters and it was great. He did another one that was a guy in a monologue situation, but also doing stuff on stage at the same time and stuff that I was like, I don't know if I should do that. Yeah. So it's always, you got to push yourself because no one else is going to push you. When we're playing with someone else, they will push you or at least respond to you and you have to change what you're doing. So you have to do something that is a little scary. Yeah. Every show.
Is there something you would never do when you do a solo show?
I don't know.
Okay.
That's a very ominous question.
I know.
I don't know.
A certain game, like not a longer form, but if you do shorter games. I saw you once when you talk to yourself on
the screen.
On the screen, yeah. Yes. Maybe something shorter that you tried and you say that it's something I will never try again.
No, I don't think so.
Mm-hmm.
Every game, every structure has its merits. It's how you use it. There's some games I just don't like. I think they just don't work.
Mm-hmm.
Over 30 years of playing improv and theater sports, there's some that just like, yeah, you could do that. It's never a very good scene, but it's a fun game, whatever. But for myself, I just don't have those in my head of things I don't want to do.
Okay.
Yeah. But I should broaden my game list of things I do at the top of the show. Going back to the kind of the same 5 ideas of different things to start the show with.
Yeah.
Yeah. And they're fine and they're good. Yeah. And each one is challenging in its own way each time. But I'm still looking for another structure, you know, that I can play with.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Do you have another format, a solo format, except for Game of Death, or
Yes, because Game of Death is a Theater in Bahnhof production, mm-hmm. and so people should buy it.
Yes.
You know, they pay for the show, and that mm-hmm. that money goes to the theater, mm-hmm. and I'm an employee of the theater. Mm-hmm. And sometimes they can't do that. So I say, but they still really want a solo show. I say, okay, well, I'll do a solo show, but it's not Game of Death. I have to change the structure. Okay. The latest version I called it Parachute, mm-hmm. just because I like the image of jump first and then start building your parachute. Mm-hmm. And I took Wikipedia, and there's a randomizer button. You hit it random, and you get a random article. And I do that for one thing, read a bit about it with the audience, mm-hmm. hit it again, get another thing. Okay, start the story. Either in one or the other, or like try to make the connection right away, or focus on one of the Wikipedia articles for a while, make a story happen there, switch to the other one, make a story happen there, and see where they cross. And then maybe halfway through the show, I'll ask someone again, hit random again, and we'll get another one. Yeah. So it's not radical. It's just another way to get suggestions. Okay. That's just not the Game of Death. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Edit out this pause.
yeah. Shanine will edit out. No, I'm just so in awe of like all of those different possibilities you have, and you also I think open up for yourself with all the different shows you do. And now we talked about that before the recording. Is there anything that makes you nervous before a show with the amount of experience you have now?
I don't think I've ever really been nervous, especially before improv. I'm nervous with a scripted play, mm-hmm, you know, because mm-hmm. things have to go a certain way. And I hope I remember every bit. And sometimes I don't. And then I kick myself if I mess up a monologue or something, a written thing. I was nervous the first few Game of Death shows just because it was a huge challenge, mm-hmm. something I'd never done. And first time playing in Europe, we were a little nervous. We came over like... We have no idea how a foreign audience will react to us. And as soon as we get a couple laughs, then it's like, oh, that's okay. It's great. The people are people.
Yes.
Yeah. And we just learned, just don't make references that wouldn't cross the ocean. Don't make Canadian TV show references or things that only happen in North America. And we learned really quickly, okay, we're fine as long as we stick to broader topics. Mm-hmm. Yeah. But nervous? No. I thank God, because I'm playing a lot. So if I get nervous before every show, I'd be a wreck.
Yeah, maybe that's... I still get nervous. I don't play a lot at the moment, but when we played more often, I still got very nervous. Mm-hmm. But maybe with the experience you have, that just...
Yeah, but even in the beginning, I wasn't really nervous.
Really?
Even from the very first show, I don't think I was nervous. I was just, I want to get out there. I want to get on stage.
Okay.
Yeah. Because I also know it's totally safe. It's completely safe.
Yeah.
You were just fucking around. We're just moving and talking. Yeah. If I maybe play with someone who I don't quite understand or quite trust, it's like, this person seems a little crazy. Now we have to do a show together. It's like, it's not nervousness, but I'm like, it's more concern. Mm-hmm. My radar is up a little differently. Yeah.
Is there another solo improv show that you really, really like? I mean, you've talked about the one with the horror. My voice is dying. I'm sorry. The horror improv show. But is there something else that you like really recommend to our audience to go and see?
Inbal Lori is an Israeli woman living in Berlin. And I've seen her do a solo show. And she's fantastic. And I met with her a couple of days this year just to talk about it. And she did a little bit, like, it was a weird workshop, just me and her. Right? But she always astounds me of her skill and her style. Lee White also is a Canadian in Berlin. And one of his shows that I love was called Your 15 Minutes of Fame. And he will only do a scene if someone from the audience comes up to play with him. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So it's not exactly solo, but he does not want improvisers.
Oh, I think is it possible that he was in something with the Theater im Bahnhof? He was here and he did that.
Yeah.
He was
in a production in 2013, I think. Woods, maybe 2011, And maybe he played his 15 minutes of fame here.
Yeah, because I think I've seen that.
We saw that
together. Yeah. Right? Yeah.
Yeah, and so he gets everybody to stand up.
Uh-huh.
He says, if you're an improviser, sit down.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, if you've ever taken a workshop, sit down. If you're an actor, sit down. If you've ever been on stage, sit down. And by the end, there's like five people standing because they've never been on stage. He goes, this is your cast for tonight. I'm going to sit here until one of those people comes up and joins me. It's such a great challenge to the whole audience.
Yes.
And to these five people, they know it's just us. One of us has to go up there or there's no show. And he says, I am happy to sit here and drink my wine for an hour, but that's not what these people paid for. So, yeah,
and it's so great. I really loved it. The way he works with the audience members. It's really, really great.
Yeah.
Another solo show that I blew me away was Pippa Evans from London. She did a solo musical.
Really?
Yeah. Yeah.
Wow. Yeah.
And Jill Bernard from Minnesota.
Mm-hmm. Uh-huh.
She's a tornado. She's wonderful. And she has a show called Drum Machine where she'll do a solo show and with a lot of characters. And when it's time for a song, she hits random on this drum machine. It comes up with a random beat. And then she improvises a song for the moment. And then it's so
just
simple.
Just with like one random click.
Yeah, you hit it and it goes. Wow. And she goes, okay, that's the song. It's great.
Great.
Yeah. So they're out there, you know, there's a lot of people doing cool stuff. And everyone's got their own take on what it means.
Mm.
Yeah. I did a workshop with a guy online, this French dude who looks like Hugh Jackman, really handsome guy. And he said, I want to do a solo show and then maybe we can talk, you know? And so I spent a couple hours just really talking with him about what do you want to do? And, So I hope he's doing it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Can people come up to you and ask you for advice?
Do not approach me. I'm feeding my daughter. No. It's Eminem. Yeah, people talk to me all the time about solo stuff or workshops. Yeah.
Okay. Well, I think it's time for our...
It is, yeah.
...lightning round, Karina. Karina has prepared a sound
for lightning round.
We'll just wait for it. Lightning round! So, Jacob, this
is way better than what I could.
We'll do that again.
Is it the first time you heard that?
Yeah.
That's great. That doesn't sound like lightning at all.
No.
It's a good thing you asked the questions because I have to laugh.
Huh? Yeah, no, we'll do that again.
Yes, please.
Yeah.
Lightning round.
Jacob, your best advice for someone who starts with improv?
Don't try to be funny.
So in improv, we play many different characters. Do you have a favorite character that you like to go back to?
I seem to have a tendency to go to the weird witch in the woods or the old weird man in the woods when I need someone to show up.
Could you give us an example of the weird witch man in the woods?
Like, there you are. I've been waiting for you.
Thank you. So which improv actor or player was most inspiring or influential for you?
Mark Meer.
Could you tell us who Mark Meer is?
Mark Meer is my best friend for 30 years. He started with me in Rapid Fire when we were both teenagers, and he's just the best improviser on the planet, mm-hmm. and he's constantly inspiring. And when he starts something, you see the genre, you see the whole thing. You know, he is so in the role. He's a huge comic book nerd, and he loves comic books. Mm-hmm. And so when he gives you an image, you see it. There's no two ways about it. So my job sometimes is to throw him off or I can fulfill what he wants. And that's wonderful to do. But sometimes I'm like, yeah, okay, I know what you want. I'm going to push you a little. But yeah, he's just off the charts. Yeah. And my other buddy, Ron Peterson, he's a powerhouse.
So if geographical or time distance wouldn't play a role, with whom would you like to be on stage?
I don't know, there's too many people that there's so many great people, you know. There's people around the world that I've met them maybe once, and they're still a shining light for me. They're out there, like, you know. I met Joe Bill a few times. He's an amazing improviser in Chicago. Ken Yang Sam is in Reunion Island. Patty Styles is in Australia. All these people, like, I know people in Japan and in Dubai and South Africa and Bogota, Colombia, that whenever I think of these places, that's who I think of. Is I think of these people. People in Los Angeles, in Seattle, Vancouver. Yeah, so it's hard. If I start naming people, then I have the sin of omission that are people I leave out, so I can't.
Okay. Yeah. All right. Do you have a personal improv Bible?
Like a book?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
No.
Okay.
No, I like to dip into them and get little bits and pieces, but I don't highlight things. I should, you know, so I can easily find those. What was I thinking about, you know? No, it's all flow. If I write things down, it's also the sin of omission. Then I remember what I wrote down, and I don't remember the whole other thing that I was thinking. So I like to keep this holistic thing going of packing the information in holistically.
Okay. We talked about that before a bit. Do you have an improv format that gets you annoyed or that you rather avoid?
What annoys me is when people think they need to make a comedy show when they don't necessarily have to. When you see them sacrificing truth for comedy.
Mm-hmm.
And it changes show to show, and there's some groups that have a tendency to do this. I wouldn't say there's a format, because even theater sports, we were always trying to do stories despite the games. The games are there to hinder us from being free and creating whatever stories we want. So our job was, how do you make a story when you have to stand on one foot the whole time, you know, whatever the hoop you have to jump through is. Yeah, so that bugs me, is when people think, well, it's a comedy show, so let's do comedy. And they're missing so much. They're missing so much, so many great moments and so much connection with the audience and with each other when they do that.
Mm-hmm. So
I don't want to name names, but
we don't. And what's your favorite improv format? Do you have one?
One of my favorites is what I said with Gordon's Big Bald Head, where we take a description of a play, read it, and then we play that for an hour. That's one of my favorites. The other extreme, like an extreme favorite, is the marathon shows, the soapathon, improv marathon shows, where we play from Friday night to Sunday night.
Oh, yeah.
50 hours. We started them in Canada in the 90s, and then our friends in London started doing them, and so I can get to London easier than I can get to Canada. We get a setting, like we know what the setting is. This is a casino in 1967 in Las Vegas. Okay, I come with a costume and a character, maybe a couple of costumes and ideas, and a reason to be there. And that's all you need to walk in with. And the director says who's in what scene as it goes along. And then we play for 2 hours, take a little break. So an hour 45, take a little break, start the next episode. It's like binge watching a TV show all weekend. And there's so many improvisers that come in and you lose your mind because you're not getting any sleep. And there's the highest peaks and the lowest valleys. Like the paranoia about yourself is so deep and you hate yourself and you wonder, why the hell are we doing this? And then 2 hours later, you're on top of the world because you can't believe that a story that started on Friday night or a joke that happened on Saturday night is just mentioned, and everyone goes, oh, yes, of course, because it was beautifully planned out, as if it was beautifully planned out. So that is such a thrill and such a rare human experience, the marathon shows. Yeah.
Just a quick question, but you sleep at night or do you go through the night as well?
We go through the night. The shows keep going. Sometimes people come in shifts, you know, I'm there from 2 a.m. to 6 a.m. I got the midnight shift. And some of us have carte blanche. We can come and go as we please. Okay. I've done the whole 50 hours in the past. And now what I do is I go from Friday night to about Sunday morning. Then I take 2 or 3 hour nap. So I come in fresh for family hour, which is great, where everyone has to be nice and clean because there's kids in the audience. Yeah. And then the rest of the show is easy peasy.
Okay.
So that's an experience that is rarefied and glorious, and it'll destroy you. It's great.
I can imagine.
Yeah, me too. And is there, now you've done a lot of things already on stage, is there anything that you would like to try on stage that you haven't done before?
Anything I'd like to try? I don't know. When something occurs to me, I can just try it, you know? A while ago, I was interested in story within a story, like Frankenstein. The book of Frankenstein is someone telling the story, and then someone tells that story, and someone tells that story. And I was like, oh, that's cool to have these layers. And so many books from that era are structured like that. And then when I tried it, I was like, oh, that's exciting. That's really cool. It changes how we go through a story. So yeah, I don't think there's anything that I've been thinking, oh, I need to get something like that. Whenever I want to try something, I can try it. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Also with Trixie, with my wife, we do a show called Series Junkies, mm-hmm. where we don't play the scenes, we describe the scenes. And we have slides of real locations, and we describe what happens in these locations. And that was a huge challenge and something very strange, to remove acting from improv. It's just the writing and directing. And we'd have like moments of dialogue. We'd say two, three lines, maybe five lines. And then after that, it's too much. Go back to describing, like a writer's room. So that was something that made us do new kinds of stories, because we wanted to create a show like the shows we would get hooked on TV. How do they work? How do they keep you interested over 6, 7, 12 episodes? How do they do that? So that was great for us to focus on that. Mm-hmm. And then online, when we did it, we focused on shorter stories that were Twilight Zone style. So like changing realities and weird stuff that happens for a good reason. Yeah, and that's because of us challenging each other, and especially Trixie saying, we gotta work on something really different. Mm-hmm. Yeah, mm-hmm. She's terrifyingly smart that way. She has no patience for bullshit. So when she says she wants to do something new, I'm like, okay, it's gonna hurt, but I'll do it. You know.
All right. So we have two more questions. What's your favorite warm up? Do you have a favorite warm up?
By myself? No. I used to do push ups before a show just to get my blood running. You know, it's good to get your blood racing a little bit. Actually, thinking back now, my favorite warm-up was when we used to do shows in Canada at a comedy club, Yuck Yucks or some, you know, the comedy barn or something. And it was it was a room in a entertainment center with bowling and an arcade and laser tag. And so we had free access to all this stuff. So sometimes before the show, we'd get there a little early and play laser tag. Then we would go into this shitty comedy club and do some of the best improv that we had ever done in these 15-minute bits. And we'd wonder, why were we so good? Oh, my God, it was so fun. It was, because we're running around having a great time playing laser tag for half an hour. And then we go do our show. So I think that's my favorite warm-up, is actually playing laser tag.
Playing laser tag. Okay. Nice. Noted.
So advice to people out there, find a comedy club right next to a laser tag club.
Yes. Nice. And last questions. Question, which improv show have you really enjoyed as an audience member?
Well, I could be a dick and say all of them, you know, because even the bad ones I love. But what thrilled me, there's been a lot that have thrilled me, but what was really especially fascinating was in London, our friends, the Showstoppers, they have a show called Showstopper. And it's an improv musical, and they got a run in the West End in a big old theater, like right next to Billy Elliot and the Michael Jackson musical and whatever. Wow. Huge musical, like the lights all over. And then there's this improv show. And so Trixie and I, we booked time off. We flew to London to see our friends do this. And it was astounding how good it was. So that, I think, was the biggest thrill for a long time, mm-hmm. was seeing them. And they won awards for this show, and it's still going, and they're a huge hit. They did 6 months in the West End, and that's very rare for a show from, like, it's not an Andrew Lloyd Webber musical. It's a bunch of assholes making shit up, you know. So that was, for me, that was thrilling that it was such a big event for them, and to see 600 people watch this improv show and be totally invested and see how they work the show, I was absolutely thrilled. Yeah. And on the flip side of that, in 2023, in the summer, I'm going to Edmonton with my friends Ron and Mark, and we have a 5-week run of improv shows in a 400-seat theater.
Yay!
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, it's really exciting.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
That's really, really great.
And we can build a set. Wow. We can have projection. It's going to be great.
I don't know what to say.
2023. Yes. We go to Canada. Yes. That's what you're going to say, Shanine.
The audience can see my face. I'm like the old mouth emoji all the time.
And the show, instead of plays, like what we usually do is improvised plays, it'll be improvised movies because it's a more general audience than a theater audience. Mm-hmm. So it's called Cluster Flick. Working title, but I think it's good.
Yeah, I think it's good too.
I think it's good,
Yeah, so that was our light. I don't know, Shanine, if we should call it the lightning round. Maybe we call it the rain drizzle round. Yeah, because it's not like... It's more talkative.
That's true.
Yeah, and I think that was our first premiere podcast.
Yes. Everyone, go out and see Jacob Bennigan solo or with Theater im Bahnhof or wherever you can find him. We can recommend it.
Yeah.
Yes, thank you.
Do that.
Thanks for coming.
Thank you for
having
me.
Thank you for coming, Jacob. And Shanine, we switch back to German for a little bit.
Ja, sehr gut.
Gut, Shanine. Das war Podcast Nummer 1.
Richtig. Sagen wir das gleiche nochmal auf Deutsch.
Ja.
Okay, alles klar. Erste Folge geschafft, Carina.
Wir freuen uns schon auf die nächste.
Ja. Mit Andreas Wagner.
Genau.
Lasst euch überraschen.